Thank you and welcome back. Just enjoying the sound until its end. For our anchor in the sit today, I was stay in the body. So often it's, well, I know for myself and for some others, it's just so easy to be in the head and kind of up and out or leaning forward. So before we start, I'm going to invite you just to lean into the back body. And this might literally mean leaning back or just energetically occupying the space behind you and around you. Again, habitually, we can just sort of stay in the first square foot. And I want to invite us to really imagine taking up sort of the full scope of our energetic body. You know, in kindergarten, they tell kids, like, stand inside your hula hoop. That's your personal space. So can we imagine kind of playing with that idea of filling out our energetic awareness into that hula hoop, if that's a helpful image? The invitation here is, can we locate ourselves in our bodies in this energetic space that we occupy and claim that? So allow ourselves to expand out. And some of us might be like, oh, no, that doesn't feel good. Okay, then let it go. But to play with that idea of at least occupying the back body, leaning back, particularly on the computer, we can tend to lean in. And if we move in the world primarily from the intellect or from the mind, then that kind of, that's got the weight that leans forward and we lean in. So just playing around with where is your actual sense of balance in the body? With the skull balanced on the vertebrae, the shoulders and the hips, and then the alignment. Feet on the floor, if that's how you're sitting. You may be lying down, you may be sitting in a different posture, but this invitation to really occupy the body. It can be helpful to put the attention in the sit bones. What do they rest upon? Noting again, feet on the floor. Can we allow this body of ours to rest upon the earth? Connecting into the earth's energies, saying here, just here. Connecting in with the energies of the heavens, here, just here. Nowhere else to be. Nothing else to do, yet the thinking mind can really carry us off other places, right? Okay, just knowing that's part of this experience. In meditation, but also in being human, and just allowing the attention, our energies, our awareness to come back into the body. And again, I think it's probably the third time I've said this today, but if it's helpful to rest a hand on the heart center and a hand on the belly. Oh. Okay, can I just be here? Feeling the support of my hands on the chest and the belly, the bones against the rib cage. The bones in the belly, the dantian, the power source. Can we rest in the bones? I've shared this before, but the Venerable Analio has said, I heard him say, in his meditation space, he has a skeleton. Like, yep, that's where we're all headed. So can we visualize the skull? Jaw on the vertebrae, shoulder blades, clavicle, ribs, long arms of the bones and the legs, the pelvic bowl, all those little bones in the feet and the hands. Can we just rest here a moment? Anchoring ourselves in our body. And you may just want to stop here, allowing that to be enough of an anchor. Resting in the bones, resting in the earth element. and offer an additional piece of keeping some of the attention anchored in the body, in the bones, in the earth element, the stillness, relative. And perhaps allow a different anchor, that of the heart. Again, some of us may be sitting with a lot of emotion in the heart. Sadness, grief, joy, buoyancy. And how is it to just rest the attention on the heartbeat, which is helpful to have the hand there. And we're not really looking for anything. Yeah, there's no investigation other than, oh, can we pay attention? Oh, if I allow my attention to rest in the body, focusing it, if it feels helpful, on the sensation of the heart, and then just stay curious. For some of us that are navigating the waters of grief, this may be too much. So absolutely let it go. And then maybe just stay resting the awareness in the bones, the feet on the earth. Mind does what it does. Okay. And we just keep coming back to the body, taking care of yourself. Remembering there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seat. Figuratively or otherwise. Let me see what happens. And remembering that aspiration, can we meet ourselves with this gentle curiosity? Oh, in this moment, it's just like this. Okay. It's nice to sit together. So thank you for your practice, truly. Today I wanted to explore together, talk about grief, which is a big word, right? The small grievings of the day-to-day, so the day-to-day deaths, and then the larger losses, which may feel like deaths, they may actually be deaths, or just the loss that's just inherently a part of this realm. Yeah. And I've just been so aware of the lack of spaces we have to really grieve, that there's such a conditioned way, at least in the dominant culture, to be fine, pull yourself together. You can have a little bit of grieving time for something, but there really isn't. Certain religions do grief really well, that they're ritualized and there are spaces that are held. But as a culture, mainstream dominant culture, we don't, but that's not our strong suit. So then that leaves us where? Thinking, of course, about California, what happened in Monterey Park, in the LA area, and Half Moon Bay. And it's just two incidences of 14 people total killed, a young 6-year-old. Anyway, we could go on about the list of gun violences, and this isn't a talk about that per se, but just collectively these sort of onward movement and consistent tragedies. And it doesn't have to be, of course, around gun violence. It's all what happened to people's homes and the phenomenal waters that came to California, or anywhere that we want to point to where there are just phenomenal amounts of suffering. That's external, right? And then what do we do with the internal grieving that we have about even where we are? Are we post-pandemic? I don't know. Whatever the relationship and time that we are to what happened in 2022, the impact is still with us, right? Clearly, we are all online, right? I think in 2018, if someone had said to the women's group in the community mission meditation, hey, you know what? In a couple of years, you're all going to meet online. We'd be like, what? This was unimaginable. And so many blessings have come of that. I mean, that we all can be together and that we can come from all around the globe. It's remarkable. And I'm so grateful for it. And it's different, right? And in that difference, in the change, there's loss. And sort of where are the spaces for what comes with the inevitability of loss as part of the practice. And I have this up on my wall. I've shared them before. I'll share them again. The four recollections. I always word it a little bit differently, but please for today. I am of the nature to go old. There is no way to escape growing old. That was easier maybe when we were in our 20s. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. A hard one. My deeds are my closest companions. I am the beneficiary of my deeds. My deeds are the ground upon which I stand. My deeds are my only true belongings. But this embedded in there, all that we love and all that we hold dear, we will be separated from. This is a law, you know, cause of death, birth. For some of us, it comes early. Many of us in this room have lost loved ones before their time, whatever that means, at a time that's unexpected, before they were able to age into the elderly stage, right? And the way that we can rally against, I don't like this. I wish that it were otherwise. It's not fair. Why me? Why them? All of that is just part of our response, our reactions, right? But again, I think there's a way, and well, I think there we do suffer collectively from not having there be easy acceptable. That's not really the word. That the grieving process is not necessarily built in to the day-to-day fabric of our lives. For some of us, yes, perhaps. And again, depending on maybe religions of origins or religions that we practice, that's more built in. But for many of us, and again, culturally, on a sort of more global American dominant culture, our participation in institutions has really deteriorated. And again, sort of the change that's happening at Spirit Rock ongoingly, the change that's happened for us since moving off the land, but even schools, it's so different now with the online availability and all the violence that now happens at schools. The trust that we might have had in certain institutions is crumbled. So then what comes in its place? And what do we do with, there's a psychologist, I just had her name and I'm forgetting, so forgive me, but she writes about ambiguous loss. She was interviewed on Being, and I've talked about her before, maybe a year or two ago, this nature of the unresolvedness that comes with loss. There can be almost a, I don't know if trope is the right word, but this idea of like, well, you get over something. Someone passes and you get over it. maybe not. I think we just sort of stop talking about it, or we move on, we busy ourselves. We can kind of get lost in the busyness, but I don't know. Some of you might remember my dog, Greta, who came with me everywhere. She's definitely my Damon, anyone who's read Philip Pullman's work, was talking about her the other day with someone, and sort of that loss is still there. And the beauty of the ways that we feel loss and the ways that we feel grief, it's just like, oh yeah, there's love here. And to allow ourselves to keep remembering, coming back into, sort of leaning back into the back body, the reason there is grief is because there is love. In Valerie Kaur's fabulous book, Seeing No Stranger, I think it's what she talks about, that grief is a gift of love, or the cost of love, but maybe the cost, right? So to be able to allow those two indelible aspects of our lives to be side by side, where there's love, there's grief. Ajahn Chah's sort of classic saying that's stickered onto one of the walls at Spirit Rock. Like, if you let go a little, you'll have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you'll have a complete peace. But that's hard because we love. And being able to just kind of massage that into, yeah, this is the fabric of our lives. And those of you who know and have studied with Sultan Malioni, one of the first Western white women to become a Tibetan nun back in the 60s. She spoke about the loss of one of her twins when she was living in Italy. And she had someone say to her, like, because she's grieving, and someone saying to her, like, you shouldn't be so attached. She's like, what? That's not what the teachings are pointing to. It's just being able to understand the connection. Like, when we love something, the law says, the natural eternal law of impermanence says, we're going to lose it. Whether it's the teacup that the Zen master says, the beloved teacup, the Zen master says, oh, it's already broken. I know it's going to break. Let me see it as it's already broken. Okay. The relationships that we hold dear, we're going to lose them. And it's going to suck. This is really going to hurt. Okay. But we know this. And in knowing this, sometimes more than others, there can be a way of pulling back this second, third, fourth arrow of it shouldn't be this way, or someone did something wrong, or someone's to blame. And not saying that that might be the case sometimes, but being able to rely on this truth of impermanence, all that arises passes away, all that we love, we will be separated from. This is the scaffolding of our lives. It doesn't mean something's wrong. It just means, sometimes it is hard to be human. All right. Carlita and I were kind of laughing this morning. We're both kind of having challenging mornings, and it's just like, what's going on? You know, that these times are hard for any number of reasons, right? Whether it's the illness of someone that is beloved to us, or our own health, just the changing circumstances of the world. I don't need to go down the list, all these things, right? There's so much that's unknown. And in the uncertainty, it's kind of destabilizing. And there can come grief. I liked it better. I liked it better before. I liked it better in my sort of fantasized, idealized youth. You know, was it really better? No, because now I have a lot more tools than I did then. But there's a way to kind of wistfully look back at as like it was easier. It might have been easier before phones. I want to share from David Wyatt's one of his classic poems, The Well of Grief. Those who will not slip beneath the still surface on the well of grief, turning down to its black water, to the place that we cannot breathe, will never know the source from which we drink the secret water, cold and clear, nor find in the darkness the small gold coins thrown by those who wished for something else. How can we allow ourselves to drop into our own well of grief, the collective well of grief? Now, turning towards the darkness. Okay, this is true. This is part of it. The moon goes through phases, right? Sometimes it's very bright. Last weekend, it was not, right? It was dark. And being able to build grief into, yeah, this is part of the cycle of our lives. But when we fight it or somehow criticize ourselves, judge ourselves, judge others for feeling the grief, like get over it mentality, you know, it's just another dart in the heart. There, I'm going to quote from two articles. Both of them are in Tri-School magazine. So from David Loy, teacher in Boulder. And he wrote this soon after the King's Super shootings a number of years ago. We are afraid of being overwhelmed by unbearable pain. We worry about becoming stuck in such dark, heavy place. We forget that grief, too, is not a thing. It's another one of the impermanent processes with its own dynamic, sometimes surging, sometimes ebbing. The whirlwind of emotions is so powerful and disruptive, but the whirlwinds don't last forever. Might seem like they can, right? Or again, as he points to that sort of fear of like, ooh, if I go into the waters of that well, I am never going to get out. Which again, sort of leaning back into the impermanence, all that arises will pass away. It doesn't mean it won't feel like it's never going to end. But that's where we can lean on the teachings of Sadha, faith, confidence in our ability to meet whatever comes, faith in our capacity to meet whatever comes. And why week after week, Thursday after Thursday, I talk about kind of cultivating, strengthening this muscle of ours to meet ourselves with compassion and gentleness. It's this, building our reservoir of confidence that we can meet what comes, because we are in areas where they might not be super stressed. There's this flexing muscle that can say, okay, I know I have met moments with a sense of gentle curiosity. I can do it again. Back to David Loy, to turn away usually makes it worse. As in a meditation, we need to trust the process and let it do with us what needs to be done. This is how we pay homage to what we've loved and what we have lost. This is how healing occurs. And again, appreciating the binding, the twinship of love and loss, right? Of love and grief. It's not a surprise that we grieve, no more than it's a surprise that we love. And it's not a problem. It hurts and it doesn't feel good. And sometimes I know we can wish we could just accelerate as our way through grief, but it's like, sweetie, this is part of the territory. You know, we don't get to escape in this realm, our sense of grief. Healing doesn't mean the process of grieving is finished. The whirlwind may die down and we find that we are a different person, maybe living in a different world. I believe that as we allow ourselves to move through the process of grief, feeling into our own vulnerability and the sadness to weep the tears that come and the breaking open that happens. You know, the David Cohen line, like where the crack is, that's where the light comes in. You know, and allowing that to be that strength of, okay, this is so hard. And so part of our lives. Okay. Can we allow that, or the vulnerability, to break us open such that the strength and the light can surge forth? And it's almost like this might sound odd, but it's like we kind of in some ways die to ourselves and become something else through that movement of the light coming through. Stronger, more lion-hearted, more confidence that we can meet this. And sometimes the grieving periods we go through, we cannot do them alone, right? We need Sangha. We need guides. We need guides from all realms, right? Human and otherwise, to help us stay with a sense of connection. I'm like, all right, this is what it means to be human. Still from David Loy, realizing so directly and deeply the fragility of life encourages us to ask us what's really important, right? We are confronted by the most crucial cone of it all. What do I really want to do with the time that's left to me, with this precious loan? And he spoke in the beginning of the article that life isn't so much as a gift as a loan. You get it, you don't really know when the loan's going to be asked to be repaid. Right. Another article, say magazine, Tri School, from Mimi Zhu, who's an artist. We are taught that grief is dysfunctional and unproductive and it gets in the way of our work. Or we're encouraged to milk our grief and capitalize on our experiences, generating trauma porn. Either way, we're dissociating from the grief and isolating ourselves in the process. She, in her reckoning her own grief, dedicating herself to work and production, to proving herself immune from suffering. Like, we want to present ourselves as so strong that we don't slow down. And I know I've been there myself, of getting tragic news and like, okay, well, I'm going to go to work. One, I'm blessed with a means of making a living that allows me to be in my heart. But that way of like, tough it out. And don't be weak. Brené Brown has done such good work in shaking that idea that vulnerability is not weakness, but rather that's the strength. Yeah. When our grief is neglected and unfamiliar, we begin to isolate ourselves again, and the pain that comes in our isolation. We cannot see that there are things that are around us that are whole and mental, multidimensional beings around us who have also experienced heartache. Right? I'm sure every one of us in this room could go through a list of things that we have recently grieved, are currently grieving, or maybe fearing and grieving at some point, right? This is because we're always in a process of flux, always in the process of loving and losing. Yeah. Amid our tumultuous global circumstances, we're experiencing much collective and premature unnecessary loss. We are in a collective mourning, yet it's really not recognized. She has an interesting line that grief is an ancestor who teaches us to exercise constant and immense gratitude. I read the article a couple of times. I'm not sure I totally understand that idea of grief as an ancestor, but I like the image that it's always with us. And again, Carlita and I were speaking before, and I named the book the Book Thief, that we both love, and it's written from the point of view of death. And in Vinnie Farrar's class, taught with Frank Kazaki about A Year to Live. How can we live with death? Death as in literal, our own and those that we love, but sort of the way that Buddhists can talk about that, you know, every night falling into sleep is a kind of a death. Tibetans talk about that more, that we can look at all the ways in the course of a day that things that we've lost or that die, because nothing's ever the same. A moment comes and it moves away, right? We could even have that be a practice of this moment, then that moment ends, and the next moment. And how can we, in working with transitions, even paying attention to if we move through a door, we're moving through a threshold, we're leaving one room, moving into another, that in a way, metaphorically, is sort of a closure, whether or not the door stays open or not, but leaving something, moving into something else. We are constantly moving and leaving and moving, changing. And being able, when we pay attention on this small, that when we move, leave a room, we say goodbye to whomever we may live with, or say goodbye to when we're with people, there's an end. Oh, the reality is we don't know whether we'll see them again. Do we live like that? Not usually. So where can we play with it again, where it's not triggering or traumatizing, but sort of in this idea. And again, I've done this on retreat of when you move through a doorway, that threshold, there's a loss. That moment will never be created. And I would imagine many of us have had those some sits where it's like, oh, let's go, wait. And then we go back, like, I want to go back there. I want to go back where it was good. Or at times in our lives, like, I want to go back when it was easier. We don't get to go back. And there can be loss there. Okay. And can we make space for, oh yeah, this is just how this is. In this realm, there is loss. Yeah. I recently put this on my wall to read in the morning from John O'Donohue. I give thanks for arriving safely in the new dawn. For the gift of eyes to see the world, the gift of mind to feel at home in my life, the waves of possibility breaking on the shore of dawn, the harvest of the past that awaits my hunger and all the furtherings this new day will bring. This beautiful invitation to arrive here on this day. We don't know what the day will bring, right? Like another David Wyatt line of sort of, this could be the day you meet your love. This could be the day you die. We don't know. But we kind of need to be present to it. Because when we're not, when we're more in that dissociated or just in the mind state that's swirling or trying to figure something out or complaining about something or judging about something, we're really nowhere. We're just in a mind state that generally is unpleasant. We generally get lost in mind states that are not pleasant. And so when we can again undertake the training, can we just be here? But being present does require a certain opening to, ooh, but it's painful here sometimes. Sometimes it's not, sometimes it is. And again, building in, weaving in the sense of, well, of course, right, that it's okay that it's painful. And I say that more on an absolute level of, it's going to be there. It's going to be painful. Okay. And how do we want to cultivate our ability to respond? How do we want to cultivate our ability to meet it and not get so overwhelmed? And I realize this is very easy for me to say, and it's going to be different in practice, but there's an aspirational quality of these teachings that say, it's hard here. It's not because you did anything wrong. And it's not because anybody else did anything wrong. The causes or conditions are such. We are of the nature to grow old, cannot escape it. A nature to die, cannot escape it. Of the nature to get sick, cannot escape it. All that we love, we will be separated from. My actions are my only true belongings. This is our life. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Just to check in, it's a lot of words. And how there may be a recoiling or an aversion to the topic of grief. There might be a relief of like, whoa, okay, we're talking about it. It may bring up grief that had been held at bay. There may be tears, there may not. Again, okay. All responses, all parts of ourselves are welcome. So just noting through the body's experience, how do we relate to this word grief? Can we locate a sensation to it in the body? Is there like, ooh, closing down in any way, or like, okay, this is naming what's here. Just to keep, again, I'll keep using this phrase of kind of building that muscle of aligning a felt, like a known mind state or an emotional state with the body's experience of it, to kind of keep that conversation alive between the body and the narrative. Grief, okay, here's where grief lives, typically sort of in the chest area, it's in the lungs, in the heart. For, I think in Chinese medicine, that's where grief is said to live. For each of us, it might be different. And just acknowledging I think both collectively and individually, there's a grief. Because the ritualized grieving process is pretty rare. I think that feels fair to say. And just no touching upon that, like, oh, ouch. Exhale, right? Can we normalize? Can we almost, maybe a bit too far, but welcome in, like, yeah, of course we're going to have grief. If everything that we lose, everything we're going to, if we, everything that we love, if we're going to lose, grief is going to be with us. Okay. So how do we relate to this companion of ours called grief? Again, from Rumiko, maybe the visitor may be sent from beyond to clear you of, I'm totally messing up the lines, but this, his, Rumi's invitation that we don't know the function of the visitors that come, say, of grief, maybe clearing you away for some new delight. There's an energetic holding if we don't release. So can you touch into a sense of where you might hold your grief or loss? Taking care to not rush headlong into the deepest grief, but just being curious, oh, maybe it's here, maybe it's there. And then placing a hand or two there, like, oh, okay. And to think collectively in our Sangha, these many beautiful feminine bodies here are each holding our own grief. Our ancestors before us holding grief. All the 7+ billion humans on this planet are holding their own versions of grief. We have seen documentation of animals grieving their loved ones. On this earth, in this realm, there is grieving. Okay. Can we make space for it? Understand what we need to help us move through it. It's not always just something we can meditate through. We may need more help. Okay. It's not because there's anything wrong. It's because of the tenderness in the heart. And it is because we love deeply. So, my dears, I'm going to stop there. And I appreciate your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.